You're listening to UnitedWeStrike.com Radio. Don't buy, don't comply. Ask why. UnitedWeStrike.com Radio.
Welcome back, folks, to United We Strike. This is our marathon. It's June 11th, and you just heard some important information about Agenda 21, only touching on it. So it's very important that you listen today and that you learn and you understand, because this is an issue that affects each and every one of us. And a good friend of ours and a regular host here at United We Strike is Hal Anthony from Behind the Woodshed, who really is excellent at reporting on this and mining laws. And I'm turning it over now to Hal Anthony. Thank you. And Hal, take it away.
Thank you, Karen. I appreciate that. And yes, this is a very important issue. As I open my broadcast at the Intelligence Center of Revolutionary Engagement, you are now behind the woodshed, opening a can of hard-hitting, IQ-busting whoop-ass on the domestic enemies in the UN-declared war, the undeclared war against America. Presenting the great intelligence matrix, the great IM, Hal Anthony. Never forget, nobody escapes the undeclared war being waged against America today, so that's what I wrote, folks. Whip them with rhythm. Whip those insane children and adolescents. Whip them good. Teach them what right is. Teach those that would trespass against us. Tell them. Don't dare you disrespect us. Welcome behind the woodshed on the United We Strike broadcast network on this marathon. You're not going to want to miss today's broadcast, folks. You need to understand what is up against you. We are dealing with it daily, and we found out our little county was about to be invaded, and you're going to find out you can do something about it, but you can't unless you know. This occupation has infiltrated us and surrounded us, and if you want your sons and daughters to live in a freer world than what you're finding coming down upon you, you're going to have to get involved. You're going to have to find the rope that you can pull on the edifices of power and pull them back down and restore sanity to your world. Today we're going to have somewhat of a roundtable discussion regarding Agenda 21, the agenda for the 21st century that you were never a part of. We're going to have with us Michael Shaw. He's with Freedom Advocates. He will discuss at length and in detail Agenda 21. I've not had a pleasure of meeting Michael, but I found out that after seeing a couple of interviews and discussions, Michael, I appreciate that you're here. I really have a glad that Karen can pull us all together and get this thing out. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, and it's nice to be here.
Good, thank you. And we also have with us Charles Irwin. He's the author, as you heard, of American Freedom, the book. He, after talking, we've talked over the months and here, probably over a year now, I think, Charles, about what the legal system is. And you kind of point out, you point out in your book how legal and lawful are not the same. You delve into the terminology of things, which is one of the fundamental open secrets about Agenda 21 and its meta language. Glad to have you with us today.
Good to be here.
And then Clint Richardson, he's a producer and I guess author of the video Corporation Nation, exposing in a nice, clear fashion for anybody who hasn't understood what a comprehensive annual financial report is and what their importance are and what they explained to us. You can find that video at CorporationNation.com. He'll help us identify some of the financial underpinnings, possibly, hopefully, to identify how we might be able to move against these so-called nonprofits that move against you in the day and the night. It's an ongoing thing. Clint, welcome behind the woodshed.
Thank you very much, sir. There is no such thing as a nonprofit.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, somebody's profiting from something, and this is the real problem. The type of profit that we can get out of life anymore seems to have been as diverse as the derivatives that were created on all of this stuff. But Michael, again, I really do appreciate having the chance to have you come on. And one of the more recent interviews, I thought your delivery of this content was absolutely right on. And in a way that I think even people that have never heard this can understand it. I found this stuff, this issue. I used to research in international law and property law, and then I noticed all the same language in the domestic law, in the United laws of the United States, and realized that it wasn't going to be a good thing what I was seeing come down. I had no clue as to the actual organization until some years later. In fact, I think William Roberts. He's over at the same network that I broadcast out of, Oracle Broadcasting. Him and I talked about this before, and he was the first one to explain that even that your organization, Freedom Advocates, around. So this has been kind of an interesting coalescing of lots of different energies from a lot of different spaces. But when I saw your website, talks about the that you support the unalienable rights of life, liberty, and property. That this this agenda is coming to take it all away. It was absolutely it's a terror in some regards to watch how stealthily they have encroached and how infiltrated that we really are. Can you tell us a little bit about you, and then tell us a little bit, maybe quickly in summary, on how you came to this and. Get us into this. What this agenda is? It really is a global, essentially a fiscal and financial construct, is what I've been able to identify it. Get us into this over the next 2 hours, and we'll try and go through a somewhat of a round robin discussion, maybe. But I'm really more interested. I think people need to hear what this thing is, because it's really a very dangerous thing. If it's not a death, it's actually death to the American way.
Well, Agenda 21 is the action plan for the creation of a one world order. So all the things that we see in society and happening around the world today can, in one fashion or another, be traced to the implementation of Agenda 21. So without understanding the action plan, as they call it, for the creation of this new system, we have no chance to defend ourselves against it. I mean, it was Sun Tzu who said, you know, millennium ago, he said, you've got to understand two things. You've got to understand your enemy, and you've got to understand yourself. And so knowing what Agenda 21 is, knowing how it infiltrates the American government, knowing how it plays itself out in every county in America and really all around the world, is something that people have to understand if we're going to preserve freedom. And, of course, the other thing we have to understand, if we're going to accomplish that, is that we have to know what we're losing as Agenda 21 protocol begins to replace the American ideals. So you asked me also, you know, how I came to this, and a little background. I'm an attorney and a CPA. I practiced both those professions for a short while, and then I became an entrepreneur and built a multi-state self-storage company. But in the year 2000, I came across Agenda 21. And the reason I came across Agenda 21 was I had been engaged by that time for already 15 years in a battle with Santa Cruz County to try to get a home built on a 75-acre parcel zoned for 30 homes. It's been 25 years now, and I still haven't been able to get a permit to build anything. But somewhere along in that process, I began to dig deeply as to why Santa Cruz County, which was the prototype, as it turns out, for the investiture of Agenda 21 in the United States, I began to find out that as early as 1990, Santa Cruz County politics was fully embedded into the Agenda 21 protocol. The Agenda 21 protocol came out through the United Nations 2 years later in 1992, and today I can report that this protocol, which seeks to abolish private property, educate the youth particularly for their role as global citizens, and which works to create, to put to use technology for the purpose of monitoring and controlling all human action. So you can look at chemtrails. You can look at you can look at foreign policies. You can look at financial realities, monetary issues, and all of these things relate back to Agenda 21 or are tools used by Agenda 21. I like to look at it and say, you know, sort of the mother instrument here is our monetary system, which is based on fiat policy, which means that money can be created at whim by a narrow cadre of people and loaned out to the rest of us. So I always like to say what we have from that system is a dynamic where the harder the average American works, the more in debt his country becomes and the closer to enslavement he gets. Now, that enslavement process is the international program called Agenda 21. You say, well, I've never heard of Agenda 21. That's what most Americans still would say. And if I'd heard about it, I certainly would have been noticed by Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity. But the reality is, it doesn't matter if you're left or right, liberal or conservative, Democrat or Republican, Agenda 21 is in the midst of the political, it's in the midst of the goals of the political leaders in the United States. You can just Google Agenda 21, also known as Sustainable Development, plus Mitt Romney, and you'll find he is totally committed to this program. And, of course, Barack Obama is completely committed to this program. His first day in office, he set out about 10 executive orders all about Sustainable Development Agenda 21 and for its advance. So it is something that the American people need to know about, because if they don't, we're just going to silently go down this road and we're going to find ourselves totally overwhelmed. And you say, well, why is it that political leaders aren't talking about Agenda 21? And there's a number of answers to that. It all comes back to the monetary system and the ability of those in control of the issuance of money to be able to take control of the political process. Just to give an example, though, of how this spreads, the Republican Party is a member of the International Democrat Union. You can go to IDU.org to see this. Now, the International Democrat Union is made up of self-proclaimed right-of-center political parties from around the world. There's 80 political parties that are members of the IDU. The IDU's purpose is for the universal adoption of the UN's Universal Declaration of Human Rights. What that means is that the idea of unalienable rights vested in the nature of a human being is to be, according to these political parties, no longer politically recognized anywhere in the world, including the United States. The leaders of the IDU, from the American side, are Mississippi Governor Haley Barbour and former President George Bush Sr. The Conservative Party of Great Britain, led by Cameron, and the Liberal Party of Australia, I've forgotten the leader there, but it's former leader of Australia, the Labor Party, I guess. The Labor Party in Australia is another leader in the IDU. So what you've got are the so-called conservative parties around the world fully embedded into Agenda 21 policy. Well, let's talk about what that policy is. Now, sustainable development has become a buzz term that refers to a political agenda rather than an objectively sustainable form of development. Now, sustainable development and Agenda 21 are interchangeable terms. Most people have heard the term "we're being sustainable" in our community because we've adopted a global or we've adopted a local application, and we're passing statutes to constrain global warming. That's a standard Agenda 21 pursuit, and it comes into local communities. Now, Agenda 21 was unveiled in 1992 during the United Nations Conference on Environment, on Environment and Development. It's commonly known as the Rio Earth Summit, and that is where 178 nations adopted Agenda 21. And they pledged to evaluate progress at implementing Agenda 21 by submitting reports to the UN every 5 years thereafter. Now, George H.W. Bush was the signatory for the United States. Now, people might say, well, but Congress never authorized the implementation of Agenda 21. Well, they didn't have to. What Agenda 21 coming out of the UN was a so-called, they make these things up as they go, a so-called soft law treaty, which meant it needed no approvals. So what happened was Bush came back from that conference. His term was about up. It didn't matter because when Bill Clinton, a Democrat, became president, he set up the President's Council on Sustainable Development. And resulting from that, every federal agency made as a corner piece the implementation of sustainable development. You can go to websites for the Department of Agriculture, the Department of Interior, the Department of Labor, HUD, etc., and you will see a firm commitment by each of these organizations to the implementation of the UN's Agenda 21 program.
Well, Michael, isn't it, once you start reading, it's a little bit hard to see in the beginning until you read this a little bit. And some of it is really dry reading. If you try to read Agenda 21, they make it so you fall asleep. But we're like with Charles Irwin's book, he points out that the language that's used in the courts is not the language that they use, that the street guy, man on the street uses. And I just wanted to quickly interject from Charles. You found the same problem with this in identifying, but you could identify them with the language that's being used. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. I mean, this whole thing is, once again, legal versus lawful. I mean, it started out with the creation of the corporate United States, and they used legal laws, international treaties, to take away our rights and freedoms. I mean, it's Agenda 21 is just the latest version of that.
Right. Well, I was thinking, Michael, as you're talking about this, they use a lot of words, and they're simple words that people would overlook if they hadn't known it. I see a lot of the word modernization, and that's not just restricted. I see it from the mining law side and looking at the public lands situation. They have lots of words that if you go and do the research on these words, you'll find that just by using the words, they're implementing these policies. Is that what you found also?
Well, absolutely. I mean, start with the word sustainable. I mean, sustainable is a good word. But today, if you use the word sustainable, you are referring to a political process that's internationalized. They play with so many words. In fact, we have, early on, we put out a chart of what we call warm and fuzzy terms. And
yes.
these are words that have a different political meaning in the context of being used in the Agenda 21 program. For instance, affordable housing means to the ordinary citizen housing that one can afford. But affordable housing under Agenda 21 means government-controlled housing.
It has another obligation on top of that. It's just not government-controlled. It's government-controlled to the international standard.
Well, that's true. That's true. But the whole idea of government-controlled housing, I think, is anathema to American concepts. And while we've had them before, you know, you go to Chicago today and the high-rise government housing units are being destroyed, and these high-cost, government-subsidized, low-rise buildings without parking garages or parking spaces are being built in their replacement.
Right.
All under the term affordable housing. But what it's really doing is completely restructuring the living and lifestyles and the future prospects for American people. You know, they use terms like triple bottom line. This is in business context. And triple bottom line means really and literally changing our accounting system so that it doesn't account for just the economic activities. It's now to account for people, profits, and planet. And that may sound goofy to to a CPA in the audience who's never heard these things before, but it is making massive inroads within the accounting association. The legal dynamics are also committed to this. The American Bar Association is an NGO. Now, an NGO,
yes,
a non-governmental organization, is one that is accredited by the United Nations for purposes of implementing Sustainable Development Agenda 21. There are literally thousands of such NGOs operating in the United States today. Well, that puts us in a sorry state because our newspapers don't report this. Our newspapers are largely owned by conglomerates. They're in on the New World Scheme. Again, when money can be made out of thin air, that money can then be used to buy up that the globalists want to have. And the monetary system we've had in place in this country for 100 years has allowed that objective to be met. And that's why the average person doesn't hear about Agenda 21 in the school system, because the school system's implementing it fully under the Department of Education rules. They don't hear it from their press because the press is consolidated today. There aren't that many companies that own media outlets, and those companies are all controlled by globalist interests. It's become a lot easier to centralize authority under a money system that allows power to be aggregated, and that's what's happened. And we see that power, whether it's through media or through political parties, always focused on the implementation of Agenda 21, sustainable development, a program that most Americans still don't know about. But the good news is that people are beginning to figure this out, and some of the key organizations charged with the implementation of Agenda 21 in your community are being exposed in certain communities and tossed out.
Right, and that's what we've actually, we just ran across that in our little county and found out, I won't go through the two bit of the story, but that's exactly what happened. We might want to get and retouch this part of the area about what you can do to throw these people, these organizations out, and what I could bring that little, that tidbit out, but this, I don't want to say, get too divergent as we move along in the discussion. I do want to talk, we're bringing up the financial issues here. One of the insidious things that's going on in this encroachment is that they get the people in an area to pay for their own enslavement. And they do that with all this fancy financing that you're talking about, this triple bottom line. And this is what Clint the importance of what Clint's work in Corporation Nation was to take and expose what a gentleman named Walter Burian had brought up about the comprehensive annual financial report and how through these you can tell where the money's going. In his study, he found out that the government, the reason why this consolidation of power is actually infolding on the government is because behind the scenes, the government is actually owning and has a part and parcel interest by either proxy vote or outright the shareholder ownership of these corporations. And Clint, just briefly, is there a way, do you think there'd be a way to track this through to show people how infolded this whole system really is as regards this agenda's fulfillment?
Well, you know, this is actually what my current documentary, which I'm hoping to release here in the next couple of weeks, is all about. Because what you have to understand is that, yeah, literally government is the majority shareholder in all these corporations. Now, I can go through a report like the New York State Holdings Report, which is actually just the pension fund for New York, and I can see, if my computer will work, I can see how much, let's just take the media, which is what we were just talking about, and I can see, let's see here, just in the one New York pension fund, I see Apple shares at $3.3 million and a market value of $349. I see Diebold Incorporated at $5 million. $234,000 shares. I see Monsanto. But getting to the media, we get to CBS Corporation, Class B shares at 3.5 million shares and a market value of $13.5 million. Discovery Communications, 150 million shares. Dish Network, DirecTV, that's not one. Walt Disney Company, which is now, I believe, ABC, at 7.9 million shares. You know, I can go down this and I can find the Washington Post at 22,000 shares. I can find anything, any media company that you can think of in your head is going to be on this list. The point I'm trying to make here is, yes, there is a very good reason why the media is only reporting what it reports. It's because government owns the media through shareholder proxy. And then votes on what happens in that company and those companies because of this. And yes, it is, you know, anyone that owns more than 50% of the stock in a corporation becomes owner of that corporation. But when you look further in the list, they also list mortgage holdings and real estate investments. And when you look at that, you know, we talk about government subsidies, these buildings that are built with government subsidies. But when you look at these lists of the holdings of government, you see property after property after property that government literally either owns outright or has the mortgage, which it, you know, these government pension funds are essentially acting as banks because the repeal of the Glass-Steagall and other such things. So what we're really talking about is a when we say something is subsidized by government, what we really should be saying is it's actually owned by government. When you see those buildings being torn down, it's because the government has purchased or is mortgaging that the loan in order to build that new building. And, you know, if you're the mortgage holder, that means you're the first lien position, which essentially means you own the building. So
this is getting into this discussion about the land use. That's how they actually kind of come in, isn't this, Michael? They use land use laws to kind of be able to control the use of land, the description of land. Then they use these public-private partnerships in order where you see a building going down by the government. It's actually probably working on some back door. Actually, it's out in the public in some regards, but we're noticing there's some backdoor dealings too. But a partner within the public-private partnership is using all of this stuff in order to reconfigure your wherever you live.
Well, I that's true. I mean, I think there's two issues here. One is the government's indirect control of financial mechanisms, but the other is the laws passed locally that direct development in a way where it basically can only be satisfied by public-private partners. What is a public-private partner, we ask? A public-private partner is a guy who is willing to partner with government in the pursuit of government objectives. So you can come to any town USA. I can think of my town, Santa Cruz, where only a couple guys can get building permits. But these are the people who will build according to the government's objectives. They'll build the affordable housing that then gets filled, either sold or leased by government agencies to their friends. Or they build the kind of commercial infrastructure that government wants. You no longer can say, hey, I own this piece of property and I want to build a building that's, that complies with general zoning codes, unless you are on the public-private partnership list. Now, to really understand what public-private partnership is, we've got to understand that that is simply the modern terminology for what Benito Mussolini called corporatism, or what was called in the Second World War economic fascism. It is the same set of principles. It is to obliterate the idea of private property, to refuse to recognize the notion of unalienable rights, and instead it's just to find the guys who will do what the government masters want them to do. So, even those people, I argue, fall into the trap of this new world order, because I'll tell you, it's a whole lot better to be a free man than to be a slave master. And that's how society is being built today. Those who belly up to the bar and say, yes, Mr. Government, I will participate as a partner, as a public-private partner, in whatever it is you want, are nothing more than slave masters. And we've got to remember, slave masters are slaves first. And they're only given preference over the other slaves because they get to master these people.
I believe they're called the house slaves.
Yes. And people may say, well, wait a minute, Shaw, you're getting out there too far. And I say, no. If we look at the way the American economy is evolving, if you're not a partner, if you're not a multinational corporation, you simply are being stripped out. We have two dynamics happening with our economy today. Massive cash infusions over the last couple of years, $3.5 trillion of new money created out of thin air, was distributed to the public-private partners. And then when you come down to Main Street, we have the exact opposite effect. There is a deflationary effect happening on Main Street, while Wall Street has this inflationary effect. So while there's more money in circulation, there's less money on Main Street. And so prices increase as a result of the inflated money supply, while the living standards of the ordinary person become massively shrunk. We're on the verge of a dollar devaluation, which will accelerate that process greatly. All of this is designed pursuant to the Agenda 21 action plan for the new order. And that's why it's so important that we begin to understand this and recognize that at the national level, we have no politician who will talk about this. Fortunately, though, the real battleground can be identified as a local battleground, because that's where the rubber really hits the road. That's where these policies take their full effect, and that is where real people getting involved maybe for the first time in politics, but who have an understanding of Agenda 21, can become the core that revives the American experience. And I've got good news to report, because just in the last few months, a number of communities are showing that direction through the election of people who are openly attacking Agenda 21 and who are ridding their local communities of the Agenda 21 organizations and the Agenda 21 legislation, which is now in every county's policy making and statutory making dynamic. But let's right. go back a little bit.
Yeah, that's what I want to do. I want to hold the second hour to maybe even the last half of it, so that we give people an opportunity to see that there is something we can do. But let's lay out this Agenda 22 a little bit. You're anticipating where I want to go do. I want to show people at least the darker part of it right now, to show, as I said, we are infiltrated and surrounded. We have been for a long time. They crept up on us in our ignorance is bliss, I guess. We now see that the media is controlled by the government, land is controlled by the government, and we now, Clint brings up properly, that it's owned. If you control, you own, and that's all that it takes. So we are absolutely surrounded by this agenda that stealthily crept up on us, and it is everywhere, but we hadn't quite fleshed it out a little bit. I'd like us to return back and give the listeners a little bit more of what this is really about, so that we kind of see where are they all, what is the cause and effect here, where are we, are they placed, how the tools that they use inside to do this, and so that people can understand that we have a basis of this as we move in to see later in the broadcast how it is you can circumvent all this. So we're dead yet. We still have something to do if we so choose. But Michael, if you can now go back to where your thoughts were, and we can flesh this out a little bit more on what Agenda 21 is, does, and has in store for us.
Okay, let me start with an analysis that I call, which philosophy of rights do we want to adopt? Because at the core, that's what we're talking about. The specifics will all prove to this dichotomy that I'm going to address right now. In America, the nature of our rights are individual rights. The source that protects that notion is the United States Declaration of Independence. The purpose of government under the American experience is to protect the natural or unalienable rights of each individual. Quote, that all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights. Now, Agenda 21 takes a different program. Its concept is the nature of rights belong to the community. And the source for identifying those rights is the UN Declaration of Human Rights, where the purpose of government is to control the individual for the greater good of a global community. Article 29, Section 3 of that document says, rights and freedoms may be in no case exercised contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. You see, under that document, government grants, restricts, or withdraws your rights according to its needs. You and the product of your labor belong to the community. Whereas in the U.S., you're born with rights. Government exists for one reason, and that is to protect those rights. You and the product of your labor belong to you. All right. Now, sustainable development.
Well, that's defining the concept of property, and this is really what we get to, is if we are, what I say on my broadcast periodically when it comes about is, you got to understand about property, because if you don't, you probably are property.
Well, that's exactly right. And to further that for a moment, I mean, I people think property is a thing.
Yes.
Freedom, but property is a lot more than that. Private property is a lot more than simply a thing. You know, private property begins with your person. You know,
that's right.
My hand is my private property. My thoughts are my private property. My actions represent my private property. Now, private property is not the thing that you own. It's the relationship you have with that thing. It's the power you have to use it and enjoy it. That's the nature of private property. It's a relationship you have with a thing. It could be land. It could be a book. It is your power to use and enjoy that thing. That's the nature of private property. And, of course, Agenda 21 wants to control all private property. In fact, it wants to abolish private property in land. That's the key goal. And that's where we see the battle really being fought out today.
Michael, one of the most amazing things about what you're saying is that all of these things, from the abolition of private property to public education, is or are planks of the Communist Manifesto.
Well, I do not call Agenda 21 a renewal of the old-fashioned communist call. I had a fabulous teacher when I was 12 years old, and her warning was, you know, we would set aside time to pray for the poor children of Russia, the victims of communism. But her message was that when the world in the early part of the 21st century reorganizes its political structure such that it adopts communist concepts of justice and combines it with fascist concepts of economics, then there is a political economic threat that will be the greatest political economic threat of all time. And that's exactly where we are today. Agenda 21 is a communist set of, it's a communist notion of justice, and it is a fascist notion of economics. So to simply call it communism short sells it, because communism didn't work because they couldn't get the economy right.
Unfortunately, I mean, all 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto are in place in the United States today in some form of legal law.
I wouldn't dispute that, but I think that if we look at where the direction is, you know, the communist plank doesn't contemplate a public-private partnership arrangement. You know, the communist plank just collectivizes property. You know, public-private partnership collectivizes property.
Right. That's exactly what they had to do. They had to take. There are some very formidable property laws in the United States, and they had to be able to marry up to those, or try to. I don't think they can it actually, but you're right. This is not really just Marxism on its own, and because of the property laws in the United States. There was the Mystery of Capital by Hernando de Soto, I think it was. He explained the power of the United States in how capital how the West actually rose because of its record-keeping system. And that seems to be one of the main blockages. That is exactly the line in the sand, is whether or not they're going to get us to give up our property and not be able to fight it. So they did have to marry the two. They aren't the same. So I have to agree with you on that. The other thing is I wanted to point out to people about this. We have Charles Irwin with the American Freedom of Books talking about legal versus lawful, legal privilege versus lawful rights. You find that the Bar Association, being an NGO, singing the high praises to the lack of private property possession by people. You have to understand, when you go into a legal system, the attorney that you are taking on that you think is protecting your property rights has taken essentially an oath of allegiance to destroy your property rights. So the legal system is not the system of law that protects those rights. So we have all these subtle encroachments that are upon us that we have been educated out of. And I don't know how some of us even escape some of that, but we have, and I'm feeling pretty blessed about it. And Michael, like I said, when I heard what you were talking about bringing this agenda forward and really getting to the nubbins of it to explain to people, I'm appreciative of you like I'm appreciative of Clint doing the same thing with the CAFR. The property, the problem that we have and the attack on property for America is absolutely the line in the sand. If they can't get the soil, if they can't get the property, and they can't get out of our minds the memory of what property is as you've defined it, it's us, ourselves, too, at least in the first instance, then they're probably not going to be able to prevail. And this is where we have our last gasp, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think our last gasp depends upon our understanding what we're up against. If if all of America woke up tomorrow and got this, it'd be over the next day. But the problem is we don't have a big megaphone. All the big megaphones are in on it, if you will, because the money has focused that way, and that's the natural consequence of a fiat money system, is that power gets concentrated. And that's what's happened, and that's why it's now up to the citizens and not to our institutions to revise and revitalize the American concept of equal justice and individual liberty. And that's going to be a big challenge because, you know, the problem Americans have today is that they don't sit down long enough to get some things figured out. And you can't reduce Agenda 21 into a bumper sticker. You know, it was Nikita Khrushchev in 1959 slamming his shoe on the table at the UN saying, "We will bury you, America," without firing a shot. I was 10 years old at the time. I thought he was crazy. But it's turned out that he knew something that we still haven't figured out.
That's
and
right.
What that figuring is that our institutions and our governmental system are being eroded into this new format that bodes very dangerously for every human being. You know, if it's appropriate, I'll go through now and talk about an Agenda 21 slogan called the 3 E's, which really give a synopsis of their objectives. I mean, this is a tool they use and one that we can examine to gain an insight as to how sustainable development works. The authors of Agenda 21 have said that Agenda 21 will affect every area of life according to 3 objectives. First is equity, meaning system of justice. Second meaning is economy. And the third is environment. Now, these are commonly known within the Agenda 21 circles as the 3 E's. Now, as usual, they define these things rather loosely. But if you study them and watch the examples in your own community or in the next community or in any community, you begin to see the patterns of what the 3 E's really mean. Now, equity means using the science of sociology developed by Auguste Comte, a Frenchman back in around 1800. He developed the whole science of sociology. He was also the founder of the positivist religious concepts. Now, nobody studies Auguste Comte very much, but you see the focus of Auguste Comte in everything that is globalist. Auguste Comte called for the world capital to be in Paris. It's turned out to be in Geneva. He called for exactly the kind of arrangement that the UN is now implementing. So sociology, you know, the science of how to manipulate and maneuver society in accordance with a collectivist objective. Now, there may be people who would object to that definition of sociology, but to the extent that the political forces of this new world order are organized, they're organized around that concept of sociology. So equity, again, means the use of sociology and the changing of our system of law in order to restructure human nature. Now, the change in that system of law is this. The American system is based on the principles of equal justice, which hold that every person has the same rights and that every person's rights will be protected. And those rights begin with the political recognition of an individual's unalienable right to life, liberty, and property. Well, we're shifting our system of justice in this country very rapidly. And, law schools openly teach the principles of social justice. Now, social justice, as opposed to equal justice, is the concept that justice is dispensed to groups. And justice can change according to needs. Most judges in America today, I just finished a property rights trial, and the judge there is an open proponent, you can see it on the web, of social justice. You go to law schools today, you're taught principles of social justice. You are not taught the principles of equal justice. Well, it's no surprise, because the American Bar Association is an NGO, a non-governmental organization accredited by the United Nations for purposes of implementing Agenda 21. So it only figures that the lawyers of this country are suffering from massive confusion because they're part of this structure to substitute a new system of justice in this country, and that process is well downstream today. So that's
right.
Equity.
Before we jump away from equity, and we get into terminology, we get into the Bar Association, the legalisms versus the law and lawful, and you're showing more and more again that this is not just an idea that the Bar Association's there as an impediment. This is, again, what Charles Irwin has studied up a bit. I'd like to maybe get a little bit of input on this term equity. My view on this equity is when I look at the basic definition, equity is the absence of law. And that pretty much, in that definition that I saw a long time ago, it told me a lot about our current court system to begin with, kind of getting me on the track about what was going on with the bar. But Charles, what might you be interpreting on this and how this, what you've found with your research and what your book might speak to?
Well, basically, we have lawful laws versus legal laws. We've got a United States corporation that's legal. We have the founding fathers of the United States that's lawful, and our politicians and governments are using the legal system. So basically, we're under legal conquest. I mean, this goes back to the Geneva Conventions back in 1928, where all the world governments met, and they formed corporations in as well, further incorporated themselves. Roosevelt brought that home with his New Deals. If you look at executive orders, I mean, executive orders are not lawful. The founding fathers didn't create this nation so a president could sign these executive orders, taking away our freedom and become a dictator. Now, Michael was mentioning George H. Bush. If you look at, he signed an executive order in 1992 at the same time he signed the Rio Accords, which created Agenda 21 document. And that executive order is 12803, which is on infrastructure privatization. And what that says is that for purposes of this order, privatization means the disposition or transfer of an infrastructure asset, such as by sale or by long-term lease, from a state or local government to a private party. Infrastructure asset, according to this executive order, means any asset financed in whole or part by the federal government and needed for the functioning of the economy. Examples are, but not limited to, roads, tunnels, bridges, electricity, supply facilities, mass transit, rail transportation, airports, ports, waterways, water supply facilities, recycling and wastewater treatment facilities, solid waste disposal facilities, housing, schools, prisons, and hospitals. Now, basically, what he did with the executive order is he used legal law, which is unlawful and unconstitutional, and gave all the assets of our country to a private organization, which is the IMF and the United Nations And that's why this Agenda 21 legal crap comes from. I mean, it's totally unlawful. Like Michael said, if we had a huge megaphone and everybody knew this stuff, and wake up the next morning, it'd be over.
Right. Well, this is interesting that you, pull up all these things that back in 1928. I'm doing a reading on my broadcast right now about the Libra Code, kicking us back to Lincoln's time, that was adopted in 1907 at the Hague conferences, that brings all this stuff to bear, as explaining to us we live under a martial law. But without getting over to that, I just wanted to point out this is so long term. This plan is really just the last of the current iteration of a global control that's been in someone's mind for a long, long time. I'm fascinated how all of our research comes and pulls this stuff together over time. Michael, we just went through equity. Can we now move into what you were talking about, the economy, and what that means under Agenda 21?
Let me do that, but I'd like to make a comment on what Charles said, because I want to prove with an illustration that what he said has taken place.
Yes.
There's what's called the Trans-Texas Corridor. The Trans-Texas Corridor is a utility system designed to have a debarking point in central Mexico. In other words, Chinese goods would be offloaded in central Mexico and put onto the Trans-Texas Corridor. This will be a wide highway. It'll have utility lines. It'll have medians between the two-way traffic where there will be hotels and gas stations, and you never have to get off the road as you're coming up. So the idea is that a system of roads and all the infrastructure will be built together and will become part of the North American infrastructure system. So the notion is that goods offloaded in Mexico come up and make their way to Canada and throughout the United States without any customs review, because this becomes part of sort of the first step in creating the North American Union. Now, what's happening today is the battle over this infrastructure layout is happening in the state of Texas, because they got to get these lines into the United States and out of Mexico. And this battle's been going on for a number of years. Rick Perry, working with libertarians, is pushing very hard for the establishment of the Trans-Texas Corridor. This takes existing and new freeways in Texas and puts them in ownership to a Spanish corporation who will then charge every person who gets on these roads a toll fee. Now, Governor Perry is the man for the Trans-Texas Corridor. He pretends a conservative demeanor. He is a Bilderberger and a globalist through and through. And he is creating the infrastructure, the privatized infrastructure of America's infrastructure assets. He's selling them off to Cintra, a Spanish corporation. Now, that battle's been going on for a number of years in Texas, and it appears this year as though he's on his verge of victory.
Yeah, I'm in Texas, and yeah, he is close to victory.
So, you know, there's been one organization
What happened to the obstruction? I think it was Terry Hall, an HB 300 that they'd put in. Did they get around that after?
Well, Terry Hall has done a marvelous job, but the forces against her are mounting. She's finding legislators who are reneging on their assurances to the voters, and Texas is now falling into the Texas corridor. You know, there's still some good news. People in Oklahoma and the legislature there has been pretty clear: when you bring the Trans-Texas Corridor up to our boundary, you better have a U-turn, because you're not coming into the state of Oklahoma.
What happened to the five cities that had engaged coordination plans in their area through the help of Fred Kelly Grant? That didn't do anything, or they just went around that?
Well, I think the plan now is that the I-35, which was the primary medium for doing this, has been put on back burner, and so they're now using other roadways. And the battle is not over. And for Texans, for Americans generally, but for Texans specifically, you got to get involved in this. I mean, this man Perry is the globalist through and through. I mean, he's George Bush on steroids.
Right. Yeah, no, they don't get any easier. They don't get any better as the years move on. They really get worse often. So I'm fascinated that I guess the bottom line, and we'll carry this into the second hour, talking about how, and I want to get a little bit more back into the meta language, so that people can start hearing that these so-called politics, these politicians who are running for office, you can identify them by their words, so that you don't vote for them, you don't support them, and you can move counter to what they're trying to do. But let's continue on. I don't want to diverge away from into the other areas, but these corridor is just part of this ongoing global affront to all peoples, actually.
Yep. All right, so the second of the three E's is economy. And by economy, they mean two things. They mean the international redistribution of wealth. Now let's pause on that for a minute. The international redistribution of wealth. Well, certainly that's what America's been engaged in for decades, with our foreign policy and in our international organization membership and this and that. Let me step back for a minute. There are three documents that really direct Agenda 21. The first is the Agenda 21 document itself.
Well,
the second
before we get too deep, we're going to be going to a break here at the top of the hour. I want you to, let's start right there for the second hour here. We're not going to have too much more time to get into it, and I don't want to interrupt that list because it's very important that we hear this information all together without the break. So
okay.
Just to recap, listeners, this is about Agenda 21. You're listening to Michael Shaw. You're with Charles Irwin and Clint Richardson. We're trying to flesh out what this is up against us, how mobilized it is, how organized it is, what you need to do. If you ever thought you had...
Don't buy, don't comply. Absolutely.